Anthony Tomasini writes, when Maria Callas appeared on stage at the Rose Theater at Jazz at Lincoln Center on Sunday night, she looked a little pale, a little spectral. This was understandable, perhaps. She has been dead since 1977. This Callas was a three-dimensional hologram, the latest in a series of musical, visual resurrections that have included Tupac Shakur and Michael Jackson. Arguably the greatest singer of the 20th century, Callas, eerily, well, radiant in a white satiny gown and rich red stole, was recreated for the occasion, down to the minutest movements of her hands and the subtlest facial gestures. Her voice, in arias from Bizet's Carmen and Verdi's Macbeth, came from her own recordings, backed by a live orchestra at the Rose Theater. She, should we say it, sang Carmen's Habanera with a smoky dark sound, sultry phrasing, and an alluringly understated seductiveness. At times she turned sideways, glancing over her shoulder to deliver a sexy line, grasping her stole in her arms. It was amazing, yet also absurd, strangely captivating, yet also campy and ridiculous. Finally, Tomasini asks, what is the point of this spectacle? Who is the intended audience? Callas, a symbol of chic, remains an object of fascination, extending even beyond opera fans. Perhaps the hologram will introduce some newcomers to her incredible artistry. I'd urge everyone to listen to Callas's extensive discography. Like so many now, I loved her without ever seeing her live. This holographic specter was weirdly tantalizing, even if it hardly made up for that. That from a review by Anthony Tomasini in the New York Times, January 15th, 2018. Perhaps we might take a cue from Callas herself, who was devoted not just to singing, but to the entire theatrical experience itself. What if we set a tremendously talented musical artist on a stage in a play about Maria Callas? What if we were to ask this artist to inhabit the character of Callas in the context of a drama created by a masterful playwright, in a way that would allow us to experience, through the power of storytelling, a truth about Callas, and even about art and about our humanity, that is sometimes much better rendered in a fictional framework? Masterclass is a Tony Award-winning play by Terrence McNally to be presented this week by Tri-Cities Opera in Binghamton, commemorating the 40th anniversary of Maria Callas's death and the 95th year of her birth. We're told Masterclass is based on the series of masterclasses taught by the legendary diva Maria Callas at the Juilliard School in the 1970s. Former TCO resident artist Andrea Gregory will take the role of Maria Callas in this production. Others in the cast include TCO resident artists, and former resident artist Cynthia Clary is making her TCO directorial debut. She was, in fact, one of the original Callas Masterclass participants. WVIA's Peter Wynn paid a visit to Tri-Cities Opera to speak with Cynthia Clary and Andrea Gregory about the production of this McNally play.
Cynthia Clary, you're involved in an interesting project here at the Tri-Cities Opera called Masterclass. At this point in time, 35 years after Maria Callas' passing, why should we be interested in Maria Callas and in Terrence McNally's play?
Maria Callas was a most fascinating person. Some people only know her name as the mistress of Aristotle or Onassis. People in the opera world, of course, know her name because she was, at that time, the most famous opera singer in the world. She had a very interesting life, and I think it's interesting that he set the play with the backdrop of the Masterclass, because in it, he allows her to tell a lot about her private life, of which a lot of people just did not know. And she had such an impact on opera, as we know it today, she was a great actress. And at that time, opera singers weren't really into acting that much. They were into singing. She was also a fantastic singer. And I just think it's something that a lot of the younger people don't know about and should know about.
The setting of the play is a masterclass at the Juilliard School back in the early 1970s, and I believe you were involved in that directly.
I was indeed. I was one of the students in the class and got to sing for her what was, at the time I didn't know this, but it was her signature aria, Casta Diva from Norma. And thank goodness I didn't know, because I would have been really intimidated. She was very kind to me, and if anybody wants to listen to it, it's on YouTube. But at the time, I really didn't know much about opera and wasn't sure that I even wanted to be involved. But when an opportunity like that comes around, you don't say no. So that's how I got to be in the class. I auditioned, and she wanted me in the class, so I did.
The young singers who McNally presents in this play are rather naive bunch. Yeah, they really don't understand a whole heck of a lot about acting. Has that changed at all in the years following Callas's reign as Queen of Opera?
Well, we're certainly trying to change it. I teach at Roosevelt University in Chicago, and it's the Chicago College of Performing Arts. And one of the things that we really work very hard on is making sure that the students know what they're singing about, know what the background is, what happened just before the aria they're singing, and what happens after. But, you know, a lot of the kids that we get come right out of high school, and their musical experience is generally musical theater. Very seldom do we get kids who have already started studying classical voice. So they really have to be told that, well, if you're singing in a foreign language, you have to translate it. You have to know, which is so easy for them now. All they have to do is push a button, and it comes up on the screen. We had to go to the library and word for word look up all of these words. It was very difficult because a lot of it is very archaic language, but it made us a little more aware of what we were actually singing about. And we are trying very hard now. I know all the other voice teachers that I know are the same way. We're trying very hard to make sure that our kids are much more prepared and much more into the details, which Callas talks about a lot in the play.
One of the things I found interesting as I read the play, now I assume that she divined all this for herself, is I have the distinct impression that she came across what amounts to the Stanislavski approach to acting of who am I, what am I doing, and so on.
Yes, I think so, and I do think that she did this for herself. I don't know that there was anybody, maybe other than Visconti, who said, now look, you have to do this. This was her, seemingly her thing, that she wanted opera to be more interesting and more to the point of the story than just beautiful singing.
Well, of course, Luchino Visconti was the director of the Sonnambula that she appeared in?
Yes, I think she probably did several things with him, and he was one of the people who helped her quite a lot in that respect. She was a real go-getter, and she knew what she wanted, and she absolutely threw herself into it wholeheartedly. It was her life. It was her life until she met Onassis.
Now, Andrea, you're going to be playing Maria Callas in this production of Masterclass. Have you been able to do much research about her? Are there many records, film or video, that you could look at to see how she actually worked?
Yes. Fortunately, all of the master classes that she did at Juilliard were recorded, and there's an entire box set of CDs that are available with these master classes. And so the first time that I had the incredible opportunity of doing this role back in 2011, that was one of the first things that I did, was listen to those master classes just to start getting her voice into my ear. And I also watched a number of her interviews on YouTube. There are several that she did with Mike Wallace and several TV interviews that she did. And she had this very distinct way of speaking. It wasn't so much an accent, but more of an inflection, because she was born in the United States, but she was raised in Greece. And then she came back to the United States, and so she had this very distinctive way of pronunciation. And so that was one of the biggest challenges that I faced. You know, I didn't want it to become a caricature of her. I wanted it to be more of a nod or a reference to the way she spoke. And also, we were so fortunate to have so many of her sung recordings preserved when she was really in her prime. And there are a number of video recordings of her in concert. Unfortunately, the only video of her in an operatic production is the Act Two of Tosca at Covent Garden with Tito Gobbi, which I've watched a number of times. And she had such distinct mannerisms on stage when she was performing. She had very expressive hands. She always used her hands as sort of a means of it was almost an extension of her voice. So I have studied both audio and video quite a bit over the years. I've read several biographies of hers just to gain more of an insight into who she was, not just as an artist, but as a person. And this play really is more about her personal life. And McNally just used this as a vehicle to sort of justify this larger-than-life persona that was seen in the public eye. And underneath it all, she was just a very fragile, insecure little girl.
When I first saw Andrea do this, you hear her voice. She has a lovely, sweet, soft voice. When she opened her mouth as Maria Callas, I was really struck because she really captured what I thought was the cadence, the pitch of her voice. I mean, I was really amazed, and she looked a lot like her. It was incredible. It was just incredible. So when she asked me if I would do this, I thought, well, wow, what an opportunity. It's all there. You know, it's really so little to do. It's just all there.
Andrea, it must be an interesting challenge. You don't want to wear Maria Callas as a costume. You want to somehow integrate her into yourself so that you come out with, it's Andrea, not Maria Callas, and yet you are Maria Callas. How do you manage this strange metamorphosis?
Yes, and that is exactly the challenge, because I don't want it to be a caricature of her. And there's a wonderful line in the play when she talks about the word act and how much she really did not care for that word act. She wanted you to feel. She wanted you to be that character. And that's what I have tried to portray, to present myself not as Andrea attempting to be Maria Callas, but to actually take on the psychology of Maria Callas and think of it as Callas on stage, not myself. And It has been a challenge, and the very first time that I did the role, I reached out to Cynthia because I remember that she had been one of the students in the classes, and asked if she would share her experience with me of what that was like, and she was kind enough to do so. And just listening to her describe the experience and all the parallels in the play, and I couldn't help but think, my gosh, I wonder if McNally used, if Cynthia was the inspiration for one of the characters in this play. There are just so many similarities. And having Cynthia share her experience with me had such an incredible impact on my preparation of the role. And each time that I have gotten to do it, it has just given me more of an appreciation for the incredible artist that she was. She, you know, she considered herself more of a singing actress than a singer. And to her, the drama was, and the acting was as important, maybe even more so than the notes on the page. As important as that was as well, she really considered herself a servant of the composer. And she says that in the script as well. And she was just a brilliant musician, a brilliant artist. She really paved the way for serving the drama, interpreting a character rather than just singing, standing and singing on stage. And she went through this incredible physical transformation and lost nearly 80 pounds in a very short period of time and transformed herself into this glamorous figure. And underneath it all, she was still this ugly, fat, insecure girl that she never got over.
It's kind of interesting. When I studied acting half a century ago, we would call that, you know, being Maria Callas, the who am I? And then what am I doing and what are my goals are conditioned by the who am I. Is that how you're kind of approaching it?
Yes, very much, very much. And I feel that I'm at such an advantage in this production because I'm not having to learn the role from scratch. So it has given me the time and the freedom to explore more of her psychology rather than having to worry about the mechanics of learning the role. And so this opportunity to work with Cynthia came at such an opportune time, you know, when I already knew the role. The role is already in my brain. And even before every rehearsal, before every run, I try to just set some time aside for myself to start that way of thinking as her and shedding Andrea and becoming Callas.
Well, she talks about preparation, you know, the offstage moment of preparation repeatedly during the course of the play.
Yes, very much so. And the role is it is physically and emotionally exhausting. And I always have to make sure that I allow myself time to have that mental preparation beforehand, before I even step onto the stage. And even between the acts, at the end of the first act, she says, "We'll take a break now." And the intermission comes right after an extended monologue that she gives, which is almost a stream of consciousness monologue, and we hear her voice underneath. And she talks about her demons, her insecurities, her fears, her challenges, her relationship with Onassis, and then at the end of the act, she comes out of it and snaps back into the master class and says, "We'll take a break now." And I think McNally was just, I think that may have been a practical choice, too, for giving the actress a break, too, before going into the second act, because it is so demanding.
Well, one of the fascinating things about the play is the way it switches back and forth between reality and recollection. And, I mean, it's actually an acting lesson. If you don't know anything about acting, if you pay attention, you're going to come out knowing quite a bit more about it. He obviously knows a great deal about the theater and how it's done. Cynthia, something that Andrea said suggested to me that you two had actually collaborated to some degree before this production.
Yes, she asked me to introduce the play for her when she did it at Roberson, which I did with, you know, just a little bit of information about my having been involved. But yeah, and then before that she called me and we talked on the phone for quite a while about my experience with the class.
Now, actually, your being willing to come from Chicago to Binghamton to introduce a play suggests something else, namely that you have more than a bit of familiarity with Binghamton and the Tri-Cities Opera.
Oh, yes. I moved to Binghamton in 1975. I sang, oh gosh, I don't know how many roles here with Tri-Cities Opera. My husband at the time was Jay Gardner. We moved to Europe for 10 years, came back. I came back here and lived here for another 8 years or so before I went to Chicago to work.
What about you, Andrea? You're also an alumna of the Tri-Cities Opera?
Yes, that's actually what brought me to Binghamton. I had been living in Philadelphia and was looking for a way to further my training, and I auditioned for Tri-Cities Opera. Actually, Richard Leitch was in Philadelphia singing a production of Romeo and Juliet, and he is perhaps certainly one of TCO's biggest success stories. And there was an article in the newspaper interviewing Richard Leitch, and he was singing the praises of Tri-Cities Opera, and so it started me thinking about the possibility of coming to TCO. And I auditioned, and I was fortunate enough to be accepted, and I became a resident artist, and it was some of the hardest work that I ever did. And I studied with Carmen and Peyton, and would have vocal technique with Carmen and coachings with Peyton, and they were just this dynamic team, and they were also all about serving the composer, about the words, about the interpretation, and the message that I was left with was never open your mouth unless you have something to say, which is very much what Kalas taught as well.
Well, now, since you are both alumnae of the Tri-Cities Opera, what do you think of training programs like this? Do you think these are really important, that young singers get something that will keep them going?
Oh, absolutely. And at the time that I came, this was one of a very few in the country. There was not another one quite like it at the time. You had the bigger programs like Marilla in San Francisco. I think Houston had just started their young artist program. I don't know if Chicago had theirs going by then, but this was a very different kind. It was still a mom-and-pop operation. And at the time that I came, you really didn't audition. You just came. If you showed up, you got to be a part of it. In fact, I had one bass baritone who was very famous, who sent in an application, and at the time they weren't auditioning people, and it just went in the trash can. And that was Sam Raimi. Oh, he said, I wanted to come, and I never heard from him. And I said, oh yeah, well that was the way it was back then. If you showed up and you could sing, you were in the program.
How about you? What was it like when you got here? Was it still a mom and pop operation?
Not as much, because by then they also had the collaboration with Binghamton University, and so there was a little more structure, and there were distinct auditions that were held every year for resident artists, and it was quite competitive, and I knew that especially as a soprano, it was going to be even more difficult, because unfortunately we really are a dime a dozen. And so I had a backup plan in case I wasn't going to be accepted, and luckily I was. And at that time, they accepted more resident artists than they do now. Now they only have 4 per season, 1 in each voice type, soprano, mezzo, tenor, baritone, or bass. When I was here, there were a number of singers in each Fach or category, and that has changed. But we would have group classes in addition to private lessons, and one really influenced the other, you know, and the work that we did here in a class setting and our private sessions, it was almost secondary to the work that we had to do on our own. That was the other thing that was really impressed upon me, the importance of continuing to do the work on our own. Carmen and Peyton could be our guides and steer us in the right direction, but it is so much about discipline, hard work, determination, and having to do the work on your own every day, every day, every day, the conditioning and the dedication. And that is also the universal message in this play. Whether you are interested in singing or not, the message in the play really is a universal one about hard work, determination, dedication. And that's really the final message that she delivers in the play, that is what you owe to yourself, no matter what your aspiration, that you owe it to yourself to be the very best that you can be, no matter what you choose to do.
Now, Cynthia, this is an interesting play in that it switches back and forth from reality to fantasy and whatnot. What kind of challenges are you finding in it as a director to get the effects that you think you need to get the message across and to work with the singers and so on? It must be a pretty complicated kind of play to direct.
Well, we're going to be going into Tech Week, and I'm hoping to do some of this with lighting so that when she goes into her more personal things, that the emphasis will be on her and the rest of the stage will be darker, so that we know that this is something other than the class. Other than that, it's really, the onus of it is on Andrea, because the students are always in the present and she goes back and forth, and it's really up to her to set the mood so that we know that, oh, this is something else again. But I'm hoping that the lighting will help.
Just a technical question. There are some fairly extensive passages in the play where she and or the singers are talking exclusively in Italian. Are you going to use subtitles or super titles to help the audience along there?
Well, no, because McNally very kindly translates most of it. Whatever they say, she generally translates it, so we will know exactly what they're saying. And I think the diction from everybody is good enough that the audience will actually understand what they're saying and what's going on.
So then it's up to Andrea to make it clear that she's providing the translation, so to speak.
Yes, well, I think it's very clear. I think the way she does it, it's obvious that this is what this means.
But then I read the play a couple of times and think, what's going on here? You know, 'cause it's all in my voice, and my voice doesn't change as I'm reading, you know.
Yes.
So, any particular challenges that you're finding in this production?
No. When I first read the script, I thought, well, this is a bit strange. But after seeing her do it, it was all very clear, I thought. It was all very clear. And the only thing, I did some work with Peter Brook some years ago, and one of the things that he always said to us, immediately after a performance or a rehearsal, he would say, okay, now what else can you find? It was never, that was great, wonderful, you know, see you next time. It was always, now what else can you find? So that every time you go back to it, and she spoke to that, you find another little, it can be a very, very little thing. And I tried to do that. I did a lot of Carmens in my career. But every time I did it, I found something else that I thought was interesting to me. And generally, if it's interesting to you, it'll be interesting to the audience. So I'm hoping, and I can see, especially with the students, that every time we come back to a rehearsal, they've thought about it a little more, and I see another little glimmer of something. And that's, for me, as a director, that's exciting.
Now, of course, Peter Brook is a name to conjure with around here this season. Next up is La Tragédie de Carmen. Were you involved with that?
I was the Carmen, and my ex-husband, Jake, was Escamillo. We spent 2 years in Paris with it and another year at the Vivian Beaumont Theater, and we toured with it from time to time.
Fabulous thing. To me, it's, for a small opera company, the only way to do Carmen. You can really do it right. What about you?
Well, this has just been such an incredible opportunity for all of us to work with Cynthia, to gain from her knowledge, from her insight. The very first rehearsal we had, we just sat around the table and listened to Cynthia share her experience in these classes. And we each took a turn speaking about what it is that we wanted to contribute to this production, what we thought we should contribute. And it has just felt like such a wonderful collaboration. And it's been so wonderful finding these moments of humor in the play. There's a lot of heartbreak, a lot of heaviness, but the brilliance in McNally's playwriting is that he finds these moments of humor, you know, the comic relief with a stagehand, for instance. It's just so brilliantly crafted, and it's been a pleasure, and it's just a wonderful opportunity for all of us.
And, of course, his comic relief with the stagehand is actually a little bit of practical advice. They will be building scenery off stage while you are trying to rehearse.
Yes.
Well, thank you both. It's been a pleasure to talk to you.
Thank you. My pleasure, too.
Thank you so much, Peter.
WVIA's Peter Wynn at Tri-Cities Opera, speaking with former resident artist Cynthia Clary, who is the director for the upcoming production, and former TCO resident artist Andrea Gregory, who will take the role of Maria Callas as Tri-Cities Opera in Binghamton presents Terrence McNally's Tony Award-winning play titled Masterclass at the Opera Center in the Savoca Hibbett Hall, 315 Clinton Street in Binghamton, February 23rd through the 25th. And that's February 23rd and 24th at 7:30 in the evening and February 25th, a matinee, at 3. For more information on the web, tricitiesopera.com, tricitiesopera.com. That is a production of the Tony Award-winning play Masterclass by Terrence McNally, presented by Tri-Cities Opera in Binghamton at Savoca Hibbett Hall, the Opera Center's intimate setting, 315 Clinton Street in Binghamton, February 23rd and 24th at 7:30 in the evening, and February 25th at 3. For more information, on the web, tricitiesopera.com, tricitiesopera.com. And thank you, Peter Wynn.